It's what's the problem? Problem is, if we let you touch the chair, you may come to take the leg and put the leg into the chair and fix it. If we let you touch the leg, you may come to put the leg in the chair. So what's the problem? Fixing a chair on Shabbos borders on a melacha d'oraisa of Baina. Baina b'kelim, makeh b'patish. Therefore, since there's a real danger that if you will take one of these two parts and take it into your hand and then forget that today is Shabbos, very quickly, you'll come to fix it, you're not allowed to move the chair on Shabbos. Anytime you have a situation where you have an object, and the object is not inherently muksa, it's not, there's no iser, it's not a klisha machtali iser, it's not muksa machtson kiss, it's not muksa machmas mitzvah, it's not a stone, it's not muksa machmas atzmo, a chair is none of the above. It's not chasar and kiss. It's not kishmach elisa. It's not muksamach mas atzmai. It's a good thing. It's a good thing. Just right now, it's broken at this moment in time. It's not used for a mitzvah. It doesn't have any of the problems associated with any of the type of muksa. But the problem is, right now, it's not functional. And in order to make it functional once again, you may come to do a melacha deraisa boin lemach v'patish. You're not allowed to touch it. It's muksa. Absolutely, exactly the same thing. Because to put the door back on the wall is boine mamish. That's mamish deraisa. Putting a chair together is not necessarily deraisa. Putting a door on the hinges, the door falls off, and you put the door back on the hinge. You put it back onto the hinge. Even if it's very easy, no skill required. Even an adult can do it. A child can certainly do it. But even an adult can do it. No skill required. It's a melacha deraisa. To attach something permanently, something that's movable, and to make it permanently attached to a structure is a melacha deraisa.
Even though you're not an
omen? Even though you're not an omen. You don't need to be an omen to be mechal Shabbos. Sorry to tell you. You don't need to be an omen to be mechal Shabbos. Boina. Take a nail, then bang a nail into, it's not called a maisa umnis, to bang a nail into the wall. You don't need to be... It's not a din umnis. You're not allowed to reattach utensils. So therefore, we have a new category of malacha, of muksa. Muksa machmas iser. Not to be confused with a kli, shemalach leli iser. The parts of this object, which are separated, which can only be functional once again through a malacha, and you have to extrapolate. Hopefully, we'll get to more examples of this. We'll just go through right now, the basic principles. Is a new category of muksa. Next category of muksa. Category called muksa machmas mitzvah. And what is muksa machmas? It's a very complicated case. Muksa machmas mitzvah. For right now, we'll just focus on one example, and that is sukkah decorations. Sukkah decorations are set aside to decorate the sukkah. Now, this category of muksa spans not to Shabbos. It refers to Chol HaMoed. If something is set aside, and the primary focus of muksa machmas mitzvah means you're not allowed to use it for your private benefit. Even tzitzis. If you have a pair of tzitzis, I'm assuming this thing is true. If you have tzitzis, strings, you have nice strings, you go into Eichel's and you buy the strings, right? And you want to make the tzitzis yourself. So now I have the strings, they're set aside for tzitzis. You know, in the meantime, until I figure out, you know, you have to know, I learn all the halachas and I get someone to help me make the tzitzis of my garment. In the meantime, I want to tie up package. I got a package. So I'm not going to harm it. I'm just going to, you know, make a nice little knot, make a nice little bow, and I want to tie something up. The newspapers, the magazines are lying around. I want to just make it nice. It's perfect. The tzitzis are the perfect size. They're long, they're nice. And I'll tie it up. And then tomorrow my grandchildren come, we'll undo it, and he'll go, and he'll do me the toiva, he'll put the tzitzis on my garment, he knows how to do it, he'll do the 7, 8, 11, 13, he'll go and make all the knots and do it for me. Are you allowed to do that? Or is just not a nice thing to do? So you'll say, oh, you can probably do it, just if I can throw it into the garbage, when it's all over, I can do it, it may be not nice. No, you're not allowed to, it's muksa. If I have purchased these strings from Eichlers that had been made specially for tzitzis, and I bought it with the intent to use it for tzitzis, it's muksa. Muksa means I'm not allowed to use it, even momentarily, for anything other than its intended use.
Okay, you can't change your mind?
What?
You cannot change your mind?
Maybe permanently. Maybe not. I'm not even sure you can change your mind. Maybe you can. I'm not even sure you can change your mind. But could we? You have to just put in. You have to throw it in the garbage. You don't have to bury it. You have to dispose of it in a respectable way.
It's
not a shavu kedusha. But you can't use it for private use. I don't think you can use it for anything. If you permanently, the reason why sukkah decorations are the sukkah goes only tonight, only for 7 days.
I'm talking about strings and scissors. Yes. Right? Change your mind. I don't want to use your string.
Could be not. If once you already bought it, could be even if you don't buy it, once it was manufactured for the purpose of tzitzis.
But it didn't become tzitzis yet.
It doesn't matter. It was made l'shem tzitzis.
That's right.
It was made l'shem. Hazmona milsa. There's something called hazmona milsa.
That's the way it was made. Otherwise, the tzitzis are not kosher to use for tzitzis.
It has to be made l'shem kedusha tzitzis. And the maisa was done.
With
what?
You have klav.
Cloth, yeah, that's right.
You
cannot go use cloth. I'm assuming, maybe I'm wrong, but I don't think so. You're not allowed, if you go buy cloth, you know what you go, I remember years ago, you know how many years ago this was? It's probably close to 15 years ago, I took a course in Safras. A fantastic course in Safras. 6-week course. It was relatively very cheap, because the guy was first starting off, you know, offering courses in Safras, and we were in his experiment class. And we had Rabbi Wozner's grandson taught us the halacha. It was out of this world. And then we had for Unnis, one of the best seifers in Bar Park. I hope he's okay now. I heard he wasn't so well. Rabbi Markovich lives in Bar Park. He used to get then $60,000 for a sefer Torah. $6,000 then is probably now probably $80,000-$90,000 for the same type of, and that's like the very, very high end. And he was the first time he ever taught Talmidim how to write Unnis. So he taught a Safras. So then I wanted to buy a cloth for the Megillah. You know, you first saw the Megillah. $35. $35. I remember, $35 then, 15 years ago, to buy a small cloth, a small one piece, the first section of the Megillah to write. Vayhi Me'ach HaShverosh. How many columns? I don't know how many columns. Five. I think it is five columns. $35. Expensive, right? Not paper. Let's say, you know what? I'm going to use it. I don't know. I'm going to use it just to write down notes for the shiur, to prepare for the shiur. Take the $35 cloth. And am I allowed to do that? L'chor or not?
So L'chor, if you have blind cloth, you have to bury it in...
Yeah. Not that you have to bury it. Is it a Dovah Shem Kedusha? L'chor, it's not called Dovah Shem Kedusha until you actually write letters on it. But it's still been designated L'shem Mitzvah.
So if you have, for example, a mezuzah cover...
But that's Tashmish Mitzvah. So you're right, you're not allowed to use it.
You're not allowed to use it on Shabbos? Or move it on Shabbos?
To remove a mezuzah on Shabbos is the raisa.
I have a mezuzah cover. I have a mezuzah cover in the house. I haven't used it yet.
Yeah.
I want to use it for something else. I don't know.
You want to pull it for...
Pointer or a table
a mezuzah cover, I don't know the answer. I honestly don't know the answer, but I'm noted to say no. It's been designated L'shem Mitzvah.
So same for a talis bag.
Talis
bags can be even worse because they're meant for davar shel kedusha sometimes.
Well, filling bag, you can't even put me in yeshiva. They told us we can't put a sitter in
the filling. In the bag itself, where you put the tefillin. Let's look at a talis bag. You want to go use a talis bag. So the assumption is the only reason why are you allowed to go put in the talis bag, let's say, personal documents. I have some personal documents. That's really the outer bag. I got up a personal documents that are not shaykh. So it's not so simple. I think the reason the oilam is very lenient. People put in their talis bag because l'chor it's al tanai. That's the assumption. No one today is makbid. I'm assuming no one today is makbid to use a talis bag only for a talis. But let's say that would be the way it is. I don't know. It's so simple. You're allowed to go use it for anything else. You don't have to bury it when tashmish mitzvah expire. You can throw it in the garbage, but you're not allowed to use it. There's a difference between the way you dispose of it and what you use it for. Something that has been set aside for a mitzvah, has the kedusha for a mitzvah. Now there is indeed a rule that you have to do two. You have to set it aside and you have to use it once. So maybe you're right. Maybe if you have a mezuzah case that you never even used once, maybe that maybe it's not as severe. You can use it now as whatever you want to use as a mundane activity. I don't know. Maybe you're right.
Because I see people that use scissors as a bookmark.
Oh, that's Chazal said. The cave of a mitzvah. Once it was used for one mitzvah, now it expired. Used for another mitzvah. Using it for another mitzvah. You're using the tzitzis for a different mitzvah. You're right. That is permitted. Tashmishe mitzvah, when they expire, you can use it for a different mitzvah that's better than throwing it in the garbage. But to go use tashmishe mitzvah for personal use, that is forbidden. So here you have sukkah decorations. Sukkah decorations are set aside for sukkahs, for the 7 days. It's a t'nai. Sukkah decorations are better because it's assumed it's only for the 7 days of sukkahs. Once Sukkot's over, you can use it for whatever you want. But during the 7 days of Sukkot, you're not allowed to use it. If you have fruit, if you have designated fruit to serve as your Sukkot decoration, and now on Sukkot you're hungry, you want to eat the fruit, it's forbidden. You have to wait until after Sukkot, even if by that time it's going to rot, because it's designated for a mitzvah. Now here's the Chiddush. When it comes Shabbos, the fact that it's been designated for a mitzvah upgrades it to becoming forbidden to move. It's an amazing concept. It's very rare. You would think, I have a fruit. Let's think about this. I have a fruit. The fruit is a decoration in my sukkah. During Chol HaMoed, am I allowed to move it around? Of course. There's no such thing when it comes to designation of mitzvahs that prevents me from touching it. If I have tzitzis, let's make the case very simple. The tzitzis I actually used. I used in my garment. And now I take it off the garment because I bought a new taliskot and a new taliskot. I bought very expensive tzitzis. And I want to use the same tzitzis on the new talis. So I take it off. So for sure, I'm not allowed to use it for mundane purposes. For sure not. For sure not. So right now it's sitting on the shelf. It's not Shabbos. Am I allowed to touch it? I'm not going to put on my garment until tomorrow, until next week, until next month. In the meantime, am I allowed to touch it? Of course you're allowed to touch it. For no reason whatsoever. I can touch it, I can move it, do whatever I want with it. But am I allowed to use it for something else? Of course not. The muksa machmas mitzvah is also for use, for something, but it's mutter to be metalta. Now it comes Shabbos. So, has anything changed on Shabbos? No. This is something which I'm going to use one day for my talis. Well, the sukkah decorations are going, this is adorning my sukkah. It's on the table, and it's serving, let's say it's not attached, make it very simple. It's just on the table, or it's on a shelf on the wall. It's beautifying my sukkah. Can I go touch it? So what would you argue? Of course you can touch it. Why not? What is this fruit? It's designated l'shem mitzvahs sukkah. Noi sukkah. During the days of Chol HaMoed, I am permitted to move it around. Now it's Shabbos. Why should Shabbos be any different? It's a food. It's a fruit. It's a fruit. It's a food. It's not a kli shemalach d'liyaser. It's not muktzah machmas atzmai. It's not a muktzah machmas iser. It's not repulsive. It's not it's not earth. Why not? Why can't I move it around and show everyone how beautiful the fruit is? Along came Chazal. They said that if during the week you are not allowed to use it for something else, because it's been set aside for a mitzvah, the koyach of Shabbos upgrades it to a state where you're not allowed to move it. That's the lumness of muksa machmas mitzvah. The muksa machmas mitzvah starts during the week, and during the week it just means usage. But when it comes Shabbos, it's upgraded into an iser of tiltel. That's the lumness of muksa machmas mitzvah.
What about tefillin? Would that be like that?
Tefillin is unique because tefillin and the one is called the levush. It's a garment. Believe it or not.
So if they're not in the makom mizayim, right?
Yes.
If it's a makom mizayim, you're allowed to put it on you, right?
If it's a makom, you're allowed to put them on, correct. So
if
let's
it's not
say.
In the makom mizayim, is it muktzah?
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. It's in the category, but the tefillin is not the best example. Because it's called a levush, being that it's also called a garment in one respect, and also who says on Shabbos you can't wear tefillin? Why don't we wear tefillin on Shabbos? Is the pshat there's no mitzvah tefillin on Shabbos? Is that really correct? Not necessarily. If a person were to make a bracha l'haniach tefillin on Shabbos, do you make bracha levatala? Do you make bracha levatala l'chor or not? It's just on Shabbos we don't wear tefillin.
Because it's an oath.
Oath. So what does that mean exactly? So it's an oath. So what? It's an oath. So you wish to wear a tefillin.
Shabbos is the oath.
Shabbos is the oath. So you don't need it. But the fact that you don't need does not take away from the fact that it's still a mitzvah. Like I told you, there's a chiddush which don't get carried away with. This is an awesome chiddush which some say is at the time of Chazal, not everyone wore tefillin every day. People wore tefillin occasionally. You wear it on your bar mitzvah. You wear it when you get married. When you make a simcha, but the average person, you go to work, you get up early in the morning, you daven quickly, be chidus at home, and you go to work. Tefillin. Who wears tefillin? It's like wearing a black hat. You deserve to wear a black hat? who wears the rabbis, they have certain like up hats, they're in yeshiva, you know, there's certain madregas. You have, you know, the regular hat, the down hat. Then when you become chashuv, then you get an up hat. And then when you get more chashuv, there's no pinches. Okay, there's the up hat without the pinches. And then the hats become a little bit more furry. It's a different type of texture. There are many, many madregas. Madregas. You know, so you're wearing this hat? Who are you to wear? Who are you b'chlal to wear a black hat? What do you think you are? The Chofetz Chaim, what kind of hat did he wear? It's unbelievable. We don't appreciate the times. He wore the hat that a wagon driver wore. Okay, a wagon. It's like the lowest of the low. It's like today, I don't mean anything big. Like, let's say you go get a car service. And you have someone, I don't mean anything big, you know, you'll wear like a certain type of sports hat that's very comfortable when you're driving around the whole day in the car, when you shouldn't be cold. It's not a kovedik, lefifa, talmidei chachamim, for a chosh of a person, you're not going to wear the type of hat. That's the type of hat the chavetz chaim. He made, like, I'm a car service driver. Whatever the car service guys, they wear these like little, these the unique type of hats. That's the chavetz chaim one. Right to wear the hat of a Talmud Chacham, a nice up hat, a Hamburg, a furry hat. Who am I? Who am I? I'm not right for this. So tefillin is the same thing. Tefillin, the time of Chazal, once an incredible, shocking thing. V'shamarta es hachukah hazos. It says by the parashat tefillin, l'mo'ada, miyomim yomima. What does it mean, miyomim yomima? What do those words mean? So we translate it to mean daily. Chas v'shalom, should a person not put on tefillin every single day? People will bend backwards, do anything, give them all their money not to miss tefillin one day. But was that the way the mitzvah was originally practiced? Some say miyamim yamima means occasionally, from time to time, on special events. So, Shabbos, why not? You can wear tefillin on Shabbos. Is a time you don't need to wear tefillin. You don't need to wear tefillin on Shabbos. But it's not necessarily something which is not a mitzvah. If you make a bracha on tefillin on Shabbos, l'cha'ora, you're not mitzvah shem shvayim levatala. You did a mitzvah. You wore tefillin on Shabbos. Are you required to do so? Is this what we do? Is this tradition? No, absolutely not. But after they kach to say that you made a bracha levatola, not necessarily. Lamayin after meaning when it comes to Shabbos and it's on the table, it's muksa. That's right, it's muksa because we don't wear tefillin on Shabbos.
But the rules are relaxed.
The point of that lamayin after meaning, that's why it's not a perfect example. It's muksa because that's the way we treat it in our minds today. But when push comes to shove and you have a need, it's in my way. I want to sit down now here and eat. I want to eat a meal on this table and it's in my way. So what are the leniencies, which I don't have, I can't tell you all the details. The rules become much more relaxed when it comes to tefillin. Because number one, who says it's not a mitzvah on Shabbos? Number two, it's also a garment. It has the status of, even if it's not a mitzvah, even if you don't make a bracha, it's something which you dress yourself in. It's a lavush. So it has, until it's not the perfect example of something which is muksa machmas mitzvah. Focus better on the case of tzitzis. Something which is used, strings made for tzitzis. So you're not allowed to use these strings for anything else. Or a fruit on during the days of a fruit for the noy sukkah. And now it's Shabbos. The koyach of Shabbos upgrades the fruit to muksa machmas mitzvah, meaning that you're not even allowed to move it. Okay, next example.
Excuse me. On Shabbat, two person or one person can read Ilchot Tefillin.
What?
Can read Ilchot Tefillin B'Shabbat.
Can do what? I don't understand.
To read To study the Ilchot Tefillin.
Study, of course you can study.
Maybe he's going excited to show to his brother.
No,
to show him.
No, it's like saying, are you allowed
maybe
to learn?
Maybe he's going to Tiyim.
Maybe you're not allowed to read the Aseres HaDibros. It says, Lo Sertzach. I want to understand, what does it mean with Sicha? So let's first do a couple of examples we should know what we're not allowed to do. Right?
No, he wants to show the
Lord Tinnah. What is that?
Lord Tinnah. That's the logic.
I know, but they want to show the kesher of Tefillin. Show me. He's going to bring it.
Mutalach. You're allowed to learn the laws of Tefillin, known, of course, in Shabbos. No Shia Levan.
Another thing is that the Lulav, the Great Drum, they are going to burn it for Biur Chomes.
You do another mitzvah. You use it for another mitzvah. That is correct. Okay, let's go to another example of noilat. Now we come to know there are two types of noilat. One is called noilat gomor, absolute noilat, and the second is called a secondary. What is noilat gomor? Noilat gomor is it did not exist when Shabbos began. Two examples: milk and eggs. Okay, there are many examples, but the two milk and eggs. I'll give you another example, and that is water that comes out of the air conditioner. You have an air conditioner, it's running on Shabbos, and it's dripping, and you have a bucket, and the water goes into the bucket, and I want to use that water on Shabbos. Okay, I have a big industrial air conditioner, it fills up a lot of water, and in Tar Vadas, they have the air conditioners on the roof or outside. And then, I don't know why it has to be like this, but there's some type of pipe, and this pipe comes into the sink in the lobby. And it's amazing how much water, you're dealing with a big, how much water it produces. So let's say you want to take the water. We have an air conditioner that's running on Shabbos, and it's producing liquid water, and I want to go use that water, I don't know, to spill on the floor, I don't know, you want to use for a permissible purpose. You're obviously not going to use to wash your hands. Maybe, why not? I don't know, but you're not going to use the water. You want to use the water for whatever. What? Maybe even the first time, why, whatever. You want to use the water, you want to pour it on something. Yeah. It is usur, because that water is called noilat. That water has come into existence for the very first time on Shabbos.
Rainwater,
the Gemara says, I think it's different. Because rainwater, it's in the clouds.
Yeah, also
vapor. I hear. I maybe you're right. I don't know the answer. I don't know, but I think the Gemara says that the rainwater, even though it's in the clouds, it's in halacha. Why in Metzius is it different than the air conditioner? Maybe it's natural. Maybe the air conditioner is something which is more human intervention. I don't know. We have to go back and see rainwater. But I think rainwater, if I'm not mistaken, is not muksa. Rainwater, we view it to be a natural occurrence, and that's sufficient that it should not be called noilat. I don't know. Egg, a chicken lays an egg, or an animal produces milk on Shabbos. This is called noilat because it did not exist. It did not exist before Shabbos, and this is called noilat gomor. Then there's something that was called, I don't know how the exact term, secondary noilat, which means that it existed, but it's in a different form or different use. And this is very, very delicate, very difficult thing. Machlek Sapoiskin, how to define the second category of noilat? Ice cubes, water and ice. So
snow.
Snow.
Can you bring in snow from the street
Melt and turn into water. From one form to another form, from an ice cube to water, things like that. But the point of it is that it existed in one state and turned to a different state. The classic example given in Chazal is meat that was originally fit for human consumption and now has spoiled, and now it's only fit for animal consumption. So now it's not, with regard to the animals, it's noilat. Until now, when Shabbos began, this was not animal, this was human food. Now it has decayed, and now it has turned into, it's not fit for humans anymore, it's not fit for animals. Is this muksa? It did not exist, it's noilat. It's noilat. Before Shabbos, there was no animal food, it was human food. Now it's animal food.
You could have given it to the animal also.
You would not give it to the animal, so you set it aside. Before Shabbos began, even though you could, and in your mind, much of muksa depends upon your mindset. In your mind, you wouldn't consider wasting an expensive piece of meat on an animal. You wouldn't consider it. So therefore, it's definitely not. It's not. It was not in the category of animal food. Now it's spoils. So there's no choice. So now they give it to the animals. But the animals, when Shabbos began, it was not set aside for them. That's called the secondary category of muksa. What is the halacha? Mutter. Mutter. That type of noilad is mutter. You're allowed to give it to the animals. Ice cubes turn into water. It's noilad, right? You're allowed to give it to the animals. You're allowed to drink yourself. You're allowed to drink the water yourself. Yeah?
You're allowed to use ice cubes on Shabbos?
Yes, and yes, of course.
You're allowed to make ice cubes on Shabbos?
Are you allowed to make? Let's say the machine, let's say the refrigerator itself is making on its own ice cubes. It's going from water. Are you allowed to make ice cubes? So this is a machlokes ha'poskim. If you're allowed to make ice cubes on Shabbos, it is better not. But b'di'evit, it's okay.
You're allowed to put a tray of water in.
That's the machlokes. Some say it's better not to. It's definitely better not to take the tray and fill it up with water and put it in the freezer. It's better not to. But if you really need it, it's okay. It's not. This is the question. Is that called category two? Is that called category one? But let's just, for the sake of simplicity, get the categories, get concepts. Is that we have here? We have meat. And meat was safe for human and human consumption. Now in Shabbos, it has been transformed into a surgical different animal. This is mutter. Here's the chiddush. This is very, very important. This, on Yom Tif, it's Aser. This is the only Hecha Timsa in the laws of Muksa where Yom Tov is more stringent than Shabbos. The laws of Shabbos and Yom Tif Kimat are always identical. There's almost no difference. Only that Yom Tov is more lenient. Yom Tov, Eichel Nefesh, is Mutter. But anything that applies, any halacha that applies on Shabbos applies on Yom Tov, or Yom Tov applies on Shabbos. Muksa is the same. The laws of Muksa are the same exact thing for Yom Tov. The only difference is the laws of Muksa on Yom Tov are more stringent. Because since Chazal allowed you to do malacha l'tzerech echel Torah, allowed you to do malacha l'tzerech echel nefesh, so people begin to get carried away. In order to counteract the person's attitude that everything is mutter, they reinforce the laws of muksa by telling you that muksa is more chomer. Where is it more chomer? In this application only, category B of noilad. For example, we'll have to find more examples, and that in the category B is when you go from meat that was fit when Shabbos began for human beings and then spoiled, you want to give it to an animal, you're not allowed to give it to the animal on Yom Tov. It's category 2 of Noilat forbidden. On Shabbos it's permitted. Chazal did not go so far. Here's a Lomish Shaila. What happens when it's Yom Tov? Shechal lihiyos b'Shabbos. So what status? Do we give it the Chumrah of today being Yom Tov? Or are we makel give it the Chumrah of Shabbos? So what is the obvious answer? Shabbos. What's the Lomdus? The Lomdus is because since on Yom Tov we're so lenient, we allow you to do Eichel Nefesh. So to counteract the leniencies of Yom Tov, we have to go and step it up when it comes to Muksa and can prohibit Noilat category B. But on this Yom Tov, we're not going to be lenient anyway. Because since this particular Yom Tov is Shechal Yos B'Shabbos, this Yom Tov is Shabbos, so we're machmir anyway. So there's no need on this particular Yom Shechal Yos B'Shabbos to step up the chumrah and prohibit category B of noilat.
But this committee, Yom Tov is Aroi. We have 52-53 times a year Shabbat is Temidi. Which one is more important, Temidi or Aroi?
I don't understand. I don't understand.
I said that if Yom Tov hal b'Shabbat, you say they are going to follow
Yom Tov Shechal Yos B'Shabbos.
What do you say?
They coincide together. So then we're lenient. We follow Shabbos, we don't follow Yom Tov. Okay, let's just do a quick one thing. How do you, let's say you have a situation where Muksa is taka osa, you're not allowed to move Muksa. You're not allowed because there's a klish nachta li'isser. Whatever the situation is, all the case where the bottom line is, according to halacha, you're not allowed to move. What does it mean allowed to move? It means you cannot move it in the normal way. But let's say, but I need to move it. I need to find a heter. You go to the rabbi, I need to find a heter. So, enoch and ami, there are ways to move prohibited muksa, which is prohibited, and that is called three different ways to move muksa. One category is called tiltul min hatzad. Category number two is called Ne'or, to shake. Tilta Benatzah means to move from the side. Ne'or means to shake. And category number three means Tiltul Begufo, to move it with your body. The most stringent is Tiltul Min Hatzah. Now, what does that mean? Tiltul Min Hatzah means, if I have, let's say, you're in a tray. Okay, I have muksa on top of something. Let's say I have a pen, and I have a tray. So the pen is muksa, and the tray is not muksa. And let's all remember, we're not dealing here with buses. If the muksa was on the tray before Shabbos began, forget about it. Then the tray is also muksa, because the tray becomes a support for the muksa. Let's discuss a case where a non-Jew, or somehow Ma'is HaShahoye Kachoye, fell down from the shelf in the room, an object of muksa came crashing down on something which is not muksa on Shabbos. So there is no issue of buses. The only issue is I have here in front of me an object which is muksa, and I want to move it. How am I? I'm not going to touch it. I'm going to touch it indirectly by picking up the object that's not muksa. And by moving the object that's not muksa, I'm going to automatically be moving the item that is muksa. Again, where it's not a basis. That is called tiltul min hatzad. Or another example, I have here the pen. The way I'm going to move the pen is by pushing it with the sefer, with another object. I'm moving it by taking another object and I'm going to push it. That is called tiltul min hatzad. Tildul min atzad, Chazal were not happy with. They did not allow it. Even in the situations where you're not allowed to touch muksa, doesn't matter. Tildul min atzad is in essence no different than actually taking the pen in the normal way and picking it up. The only time Chazal allowed you to move, to touch tildul min atzad is mutter, is where the reason why I'm moving the muksa is not because I give a hoot about the muksa. It's because I care about, I'm moving because I need to move the thing that's not muksa. If I have here a tray, and I have on the tray muksa. I have a tray, and I have on the tray muksa. And I want to sit down and eat now. So am I allowed to move the muksa? Now let's make believe for argument's sake that this is, let's say it's a stone. A stone, I'm not allowed. If I have a stone on the table, am I allowed to move the stone because I want the place? I can't. I'm not allowed to move the stone. Too bad for me. Too bad. Go sit on the floor and eat. I can't move the stone. But the stone is not on the table. The stone is on a tray. And we're going into discussing a case where the stone is not a busis. The tray is not a busis. Someone put the stone on the tray after Shabbos already began. I want to sit down and eat. Why do I want to move the tray? By moving the tray, I'm also going to end up moving the pen. Why am I moving this tray? Well, because the tray is in the way. Not only is the stone in the way, the tray is in the way. So when I would move the tray, even if there was no stone on top of it. So it's mutter. In this case, I mean metaltel muksa, which is ordinarily forbidden to be metaltel, but I mean metaltel the muksa, what's called tiltul min hatzad, indirectly, in a normal way, not because I'm actually moving the muksa. I'm really concerned about the muksa. My primary focus is to move the object that is not muksa. Even though indirectly by moving the object that's not muksa, I'm also moving the muksa, it's okay. That is the only hechatimsa when you're allowed to move tiltul min atzad is mutter when you're focusing on the object, when you're focusing on the object that's not muksa. Neyar is better. If a person is able, Neyar is another example. Neyar is where, that would be really ideal to do, that's better, is where you don't actually move it. You move it, not by moving it. If I have a stone, I have a tray, I pick it up, I'm moving it in a normal way. The ideal thing would be is to move the muksa by doing like this, is by pushing it off. Pushing it off is Neyar. So that way I got rid of the muksa because I wanted to move the sefer. I wanted to move this let's say the avisav of drak. I really want the sefer. There's muksa on top. It would be ideal to go like this, to get rid of it, like that, because I want the sefer, even though in the process I move. Why won't I want to do that in some cases? Because sometimes the muksa, by me doing this, it might hurt me. Maybe the rock will fall on me. or maybe the rock's going to end up lying on the table, and it's going to make a problem later on. In a situation where it's not practical to remove the muksa, to move the muksa, only in the case, of course, when I want something which is permitted, because by doing neyar, the muksa is now going to be in a place where it's inconvenient, then I'm allowed just to do it in a normal way, pick up the whole thing and go over here and put it down. Ideally, what I should do is I should go, I want this safer, I go like this, goodbye. Oh, I move muksa, I'm not allowed to move muksa. If the stone is on the table, it'll be forbidden for me to move the muksa. Well, I'm not touching the muksa. I'm not touching it. I'm touching what I want. I want this. So I want this, I'm using this, I'm causing that to go off. Okay, very good, tutul minatzat, tutul minatzat. But that's called neyar. But if I cannot do neyar, then I'm permitted to go like this, move in a normal way. The best thing to do, this is very hard to understand, is, which is mutter almost l'chatchila, I don't know l'chatchila, but it's mutter, is to move it with your body. So isn't it with your body? To move it with my elbow, or to move it with my teeth, or to kick it. That's the ideal. If I have a stone on the table, I'm not allowed, and I want to get rid of the stone, I'm not allowed to push it with something else, because I'm trying to get rid of it. But I'm allowed to get rid of it with my elbow. Tiltul begufay, in an unusual way, is permitted to remove an item of muksa.
Unusual way, sir?
What?
Unusual or usual?
Unusual. I mean, of course, I'm not allowed to pick it up. That's forbidden.
Can
I'm not
you go like this?
What?
Can you go like this?
Is that called unusual?
No, it's probably usual.
Usual, then you can't. So you got to go do something that you can say for sure that on Shabbat and during the week, I would never do it along this fashion. With my body. Don't go say, oh, but if I can do it, what would I say? If not for seeing this halacha, I would say, if I can go like this, my elbow, I can certainly take this and move it, right? Right? Wouldn't you say that? No, that's not the halacha. The halacha is to take a utensil and to use it to push something away. You know what to do? That in Chazal's eyes is called tiltul minatzad. Tiltul, I'm holding something normally and I'm pushing this. Tiltul minatzad. For it, for the muksa's purpose, because I want to get rid of the muksa, forbidden. Not allowed to do that. If I end up moving the muksa because I want to move this, that's permitted. So what do I do then in a situation where I have muksa and I want to get rid of it? The way is to do it directly with your body, but in an unusual way. Elbow, your teeth, your chin, your foot, you kick it. That is always the ideal way to move muksa when you're in a difficult situation.
Someone touched the muksa or move it.
Yes.
He should drink korban?
No, absolutely not. Of course not. No, never. Muksa is this is the rabban, it's not a deraisa. No, of course not.
If depend on this and he want to, he can shake the table. Both
no, you're not korban. Allowed to. You have the table. You have the table. You want to get rid of the yeah. Pen. Well, the pen, first of all, pen is a kli shemalach to liyisr. It's not a good example because you're allowed to pick it up directly. A pen is a kli shemalach to liyisr. If you want to sit down by your Shabbos table, there's a pen on the table, you can pick it up like this. You're allowed to pick it up in a normal way. Come on, there's a pen on the table. I want to sit down. I want to learn here. I want to learn here, and the pen is here. I don't have to go like this. All I got to do is pick up the pen and put it over here.
You told us
example
earlier using it as a pointer
at the Sefer Torah. You can do that. That's right. Yeah. You're not going to get shlishit off of that. That I can tell you for sure.
It's a very good way.
You can use the pen. Again, now Lee, right? Let's say the Balkriya, okay? So I'm going to go up to the Sefer Torah. I'm going to hold this exact pen. I'm going to use the pen. Where's the place? Here's the place. What are you doing? I'm alarming. It's mutter. Just because it's mutter doesn't mean you should do it. Okay, it's not Shabbos stick in the tzibur. Maybe all alone in the house, no one's watching, so maybe, I don't even think that's not so simple. But if I have a pen over here, so I'm allowed to pick it up. But if I want, let's say it's a stone. Am I allowed to pick up the stone? No. The stone is muksa maskufa. Am I allowed to go shake the table to remove the stone? No, because I'm doing it minatzad. I'm doing it minatzad. Even if it's neyar, I'm pushing it off, or I'm going to pick up the whole table. No, what I can do is I can use my elbow to push to the side.
So, hit and the table, I can jump in and pull it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like myself, I'm a diabetic, and I have all different kinds of equipment. So for me, it's not mukzah, but for everybody else in my family, it is. Correct?
If you have something, you have equipment that's for you, you need it. You need it.
Yeah.
But they do not need it. And they do not need it either. Well, not necessarily.
Like, for example, I mean, this is what I'm talking about. I have a...
A device.
Yeah. A device. And I have to...
L'chari, correct. L'chari, yeah. Right. For them, it's mukzah. They have no use of it. You machal to different people, even though for one person it's mukzah and one not.
It's interesting. Yeah. For me, it's not mukzah, but for everybody else, it's mukzah.
Correct. Because the truth is really for you, it's mukzah as well. That's really the truth. Just that, you're allowed,
yes.
You're permitted to do so. So it's not that for you, it's not mukzah. Muksa, it's everyone that's muksa. You are in a special circumstance that you're permitted in this instance to do what you need to do. It's dechuya for you, it's pushed away. Doesn't mean that it's hutra. Doesn't mean that it's permitted. So being that it's still dechuya, that applies to someone, that applies to people that do not need to come on, it's exception. The last thing very quickly, if a child is holding a muksa, on this very famous halacha, if a child is holding a muksa object, are you allowed to pick up the child? No, you're not allowed to. Your child is holding in his hand a pen, and you want to hold the child. You're not allowed. I'm not holding the baby's holding the child. That is called tiltul min hatzad almost. Doesn't matter. By you holding the child, you're also holding on. Well, the reason really is the main reason is because the child will eventually drop the pen, and you will then come to pick it up. So you're not allowed l'chatchila to hold a child who's holding in his hands an item which is muksa, because he'll come to drop it. Or give it to you, and you'll very likely come to be metaltal the muksa. Unless the child is making a scene, and there's no way to, the child refuses to let go, then you have no choice, then you are allowed to hold the child, even though he's being metaltal. Some places are very lean, they say if he's holding something which is insignificant, it's muksa, but it's insignificant, a 99-cent pen, okay, a pen like this, a gemach pen, you have a pen which doesn't have any value to you, something very insignificant. So then, since it's so insignificant, by you picking up the child, it's very unlikely you're going to move the item. If the child drops it, then you are allowed to pick up the child. And the same issue is where you want to hold the child's hand, you want to walk with the child. Even walking with a child, if you're walking with a child, you want to hold it, you want to go, you walk with him, and he's holding in his hand something which is semi-expensive, which is valuable to you, there's a real possibility by you walking with him, he's going to drop whatever is in his hand that is valuable to you, and then you're going to come pick it up. So you're not allowed to walk with a child who's holding his hand something which is muksa. But if it's very insignificant, and the child is giving you a hard time, then it is permitted. Okay, tomorrow we will go to the next chapter, next section, moving along here in these laws.
You have a cell phone on the table. You let it move it like that, with your elbow?
Elbow, that's permitted. Elbow, the goof. Yeah, pretty much. That's right. That's why a lot of people don't learn muksa. People don't spend time learning the muksa because there's always a solution. What's the solution? Let's use your elbows.